Welcome to the first 2009 Paul A. Olson Seminar in Great Plains Studies. I'm Jim Stubendick, and I serve as director of the center. Our speaker this afternoon is Sandra Schofield. She's a fellow in the Center for Great Plains Studies and a native Nebraskan who received a BS in social sciences and education and an MA in educational psychology and measurements at UNL. Since graduation, she has served in many roles from Omaha to Chadron to Honolulu and back to Lincoln. She served as state senator from the 49th District in northwest Nebraska from 1983 to 1990. More recently, she served as director of the Center for Science, Mathematics, and Computer Education at UNL. Currently, she is director of the Rural Initiative, a University of Nebraska-wide program created in 2002 to apply university knowledge and research to enhance the quality of life and the economy of non-metropolitan areas. The title of her presentation this afternoon is A Crash Course in Infrastructure, Expensive but Essential Components for Rural and Urban Nebraska's Future. Please help me welcome Sandra Schofield.
This is more timely probably than when I wrote it, but also some of the assumptions that I based the original paper on have changed and are changing so rapidly almost daily that it's really sort of hard to figure out where everything is going. So it's a good time to think about these things and a good time to communicate with your elected officials about what you think about all of these issues. I want to start with, I see my friend Francis Mao here, and who better to pick on than Francis? Some of us have crazy friends that could come to you someday and say, I got this great idea. I'm going to build a community. I bought this piece of ground and I want you to invest. That's the kind of thing Francis would come to you and say, don't you want to buy in? Right, Max? So if you have a friend like that, or try to suspend disbelief for a minute. There you have, it's kind of a nice, pretty spot. Imagine there's a river over there somewhere. I want you to think about, okay, if you were thinking about doing this, what would you want to know? What kinds of things would you want to consider before you thought about moving out there or even investing? And if that is a little bit too much to contemplate, maybe instead of a wide open prairie, totally raw land, maybe Francis said, you know, I bought this, I don't know where this is an abandoned city somewhere in, I suppose, Italy, but I'm not sure. But suppose Francis came to you and said, I bought this town for nothing. Let's all move there and have the perfect society. You want to buy in? Or if you want to get really futuristic, I suppose you could say, you know, I want to build my own for the future. But regardless of which of those three choices appeals to you the most, or maybe none of them do, maybe you're just really happy right where you are, but for a moment, think about what would you want to be assured was going to be there? Anybody got anything bottom line, I got to have this or that, or I'm not even going to consider this? Excuse me?
Drinkable water.
Anything else?
Sewage.
Sewage.
A way to get there.
And maybe out.
Electricity.
Electricity?
Internet.
Healthcare access. Now you're getting really expensive.
Bars,
all right. Well, you get the general idea. I mean, what you're really talking about here is infrastructure, and none of us are probably very willing to go to a place that doesn't have it. I think it was last year or the year before, Dr. Larry Swanson was here, and maybe some of you heard him talk, and he made an observation that it's unlikely that his sons will be able to buy a house in western Montana, and I don't think that area has been hit by the housing decline like some other areas have, so this is probably still true. But he said they're going to be looking, they're 20-somethings, they're going to be looking for some place to move that has amenities because they are not going to be able to afford to live in western Montana. And it's occurred to me that it's possible Nebraska might have some appeal to some of these young folks that grew up in that kind of a region that are still looking for an area that's open country and pretty. And if you think about, I think we're like 10th with the number of stream miles in the nation. We have western forests, evergreen forests. We have nice broadleaf forests in eastern Nebraska. We've got a lot of small towns that are pretty appealing. And so it's occurred to me that it's possible we might be able to appeal to some of these young people that are looking for some place to go, assuming we have the right kinds of amenities, not only natural kinds of amenities, but also infrastructure. And so just to go to the dictionary definition, which basically all of you have pretty much put your finger on, here's what we're talking about as what infrastructure is. And in particular, I want to stress the importance of communications infrastructure to young people like Larry's sons and others. I was speaking to a university journalism class about a year ago, and they wanted to discuss rural issues. And I asked how many of them would be willing to live someplace that didn't have internet that's as fast and as affordable as it is at the university. And they all looked at me with horror in their eyes, like, surely no such place exists. And if it does, I don't want to go there. So it's true that these young people have really been spoiled by the kind of internet access we enjoy at the university. But nevertheless, I don't think they're very likely to settle for anything less. And so I think that's something that every Nebraska community ought to think about very, very seriously. Because as you talk to people, and it doesn't matter whether it's Omaha or my town Chadron or someplace in between, every one of them says we want to attract and retain young people. And I'm going to suggest that we aren't going to be very successful at that if they don't have access to the latest high-speed internet. And it's going to have to be affordable. And we have a lot of places yet in the state that that isn't the case. And as you get 3 miles outside of town, that's really not the case. And in some cases, that's where people are locating. They're not locating necessarily right in the town. They're locating outside just a little ways. And they're going to want that if they're going to settle in Nebraska. And furthermore, as new applications are discovered and those pipes fill up, this is a moving target. And we're going to have to really think hard about how to accomplish that. Nebraska looks pretty good if you look at certain ratings nationally about where we stack up in terms of access to DSL and so on. It kind of depends on where you live, how happy you are with your current service. But I don't think we can expect the current internet providers to invest in infrastructure that doesn't give them a return on their investment. Their stockholders simply can't stand for that. So it's going to take either greatly increased populations, more people subscribing, or it's going to take some type of government support to ensure that we're not left behind. There's also the ongoing debate about regulation. And again, all of these things I think are going to affect very much our future attractiveness to young people. And for that matter, retirees that might want to move to Nebraska and bring what's left of their 401k with them. So those are, I think that's an issue that we really need to pay attention to and communicate with our elected officials and with our providers and figure out how do we get and stay competitive statewide. And it's probably, in my opinion, a good idea not to compare ourselves with neighboring states. We ought to be comparing ourselves with Korea and other countries. I think the United States now ranks something like 17th in broadband high-speed access. And so I think if we just compare ourselves to the neighboring state, there's some danger that we miss an opportunity to perhaps leap ahead. And we need to really need to assure that our internet access gets better and cheaper instead of slower and less accessible. And that's not just a rural issue. I talk to people not very far outside of Lincoln who are unable to justify the expense, for instance, of buying satellite, which is their only other option in some cases other than dial-up. And even in metro areas of Omaha, I'm told there is quite a disparity in terms of how much you pay in West Omaha versus some other parts of the city. That's all I'm going to talk about on that issue, although that's something that those of you know me, I get kind of on a soapbox about. Typically, nobody worries about what you first think of as infrastructure until the bridge goes out. And we're as guilty of that as anybody. And sometimes the problems have to get so severe that they really hit you in the face, or you can put them off. That certainly happens sometimes in the legislatures. You know, we've got other issues, and so we can't do anything about the state of our highways, or we shouldn't increase revenue to address those. But nevertheless, that's become an issue nationally, and I think to some extent Nebraska may be a little bit ahead in terms of the kinds of things we've particularly done with our road system. I think we've done a pretty good job over the last few years of maintaining our highways and our roads and our schools and distance ed networks and so on. But if you talk to folks out there, they'll tell you the trouble with all of this stuff is you have to maintain it and the expenses keep going on. But in Nebraska, where we've got just under 1.8 million people, which makes us 38th in the nation, we got just over 77,000 square miles. And we spread from about 200 miles north and south to roughly 600 miles east to west, if you went like Nebraska City to Harrison, which is way up in the northeast corner. I should use this little button since this is such a nice pointer. We do a pretty good job and have done a pretty good job, I think, of maintaining our highway infrastructure in the state. A lot of that, I think, is due to the visionary leadership of people like Jerry Warner, who was in the legislature and really championed the notion of a 20-year road plan, which has now been closer to 30 years, and not all of it got finished. Some of the expressways are not finished, and unfortunately, some of the roads that were redone, basically with making the shoulders wider and taking some curves out of them, some of those are now starting to show the need for additional maintenance. So this is a treadmill. Once you get on, you really never get off. As with all physical structures, the maintenance of state and local infrastructure is an ongoing expense. And the cost of roads, in particular, has skyrocketed. Today, a four-lane interstate costs about $6 million a mile to build. And a two-lane highway is about $1.5 million per mile. Those have gone up largely due to inflation and the components that build roads, and of course the cost of petroleum, which I think even though the petroleum is down, I don't think any of us really believe that's going to stay down for a long time. How do we fund all these roads in Nebraska? Traditionally, it's been federal funding supplemented by the Nebraska gas tax and motor vehicle taxes. Last year is the first time that we ever took money from the cash reserve fund in this state, or general funds, basically, to address highway issues. And that's because we were concerned about where we were in terms of changes in federal highway funds. Just to give you some idea of the changes, in fiscal year 2006, the state highway construction program was supposed to get $390 million from the federal government. In 2007, $350 million. In 2008, $341. So you can see the trend is downward. FY 2009 was published at even lower, $317 million. The Department of Roads, when I spoke with the fiscal analyst last fall, was cautiously optimistic that we were going to get additional federal funding and boost it back up to $380 million. But the other thing that's affected us is when the price of gas is high, people drive less, and so we generate less in terms of gas tax. So even though that's kind of a political football on gas tax, at the same time, it's one of the few taxes we can actually export to a good number of people as they drive through the state on our highways. The gas tax today is 26.4 cents, and every penny raises about $12 million. But if you take into account what it costs to actually build a highway and then what you can generate with one penny, it gives you some idea of the challenge if you're not getting a lot of federal money. Now, the stimulus funds may really make a big difference here and may help us out. But again, because all of these kinds of developments require ongoing maintenance, we have to have a long-term plan about how we're going to maintain them. I read one piece that suggested that most states are asking on their ask list for stimulus money, they want to expand their highway system rather than maintain their existing one. And I imagine that would be our desire, at least if you consider finishing some of the expressways as expansion. But at the same time, we've got to figure out how we're going to keep these things in good shape once we build them. I would support and commend the legislature for what they did last year, because they were trying to kind of do a stopgap measure. But they know that this isn't anything that you can take out of general funds for very long. There are just too many other competing interests, and roads cost so much to build that without federal funds, we simply cannot maintain our highway system at the level we'd like. And we're also going to have that set of long-range solutions so that we can maintain that. I should mention that, in my opinion, our roads formula benefits the whole state. It not only goes for interstate highways and major highways, but a portion of it goes out to cities and counties for maintenance of streets and roads. In general, 50.3% of the revenues go for state highways, and then a 46.66% are sent back to the cities and counties. I think that's unique in Nebraska. I don't think a lot of states follow that model. But that's very important to our cities and communities across the state. We have an appointed commission that lays out a six-year road plan. Now, some have told me, who are unhappy with what they're getting, that they don't like that and they wish we'd do away with that appointed commission. But I personally think that's kind of a buffer against building political roads. If you live in a rural area, I don't think you really want to do away with that commission. You may not have as many votes on it as you would like because they're apportioned due to in line with population. But I think if you went down and counted votes in the legislature, you might never get a road if you didn't do a six-year road plan the way we do it now. So I think we've got a pretty good system. And in fact, about 8 months ago or so, Mark Gustafson over here and another colleague and I were in Montana. We were driving around the streets of a little town in Montana that's a very nice little town, but once you got off the main drag, there weren't any paved streets. And so my sister, who's more familiar with Montana than I am, said that's pretty typical in Montana. So I think Nebraska's done a pretty good job of using our state funds to maintain our infrastructure across the state. And it made me wonder how many other states have done as well as we have, because usually what you hear is people say, oh, our roads are terrible, and we don't have this, and we don't have that. Well, for the size of state we are, I don't know that we've done such a bad job. Our state bridges are in reasonably good condition. One report I read nationally is there was a suggestion it would take $12 billion a year for 17 years to address all the bridge problems nationally. I wonder if that's really an accurate number. That sounds kind of low to me. But in Nebraska, I think we're in a little better shape, although we're certainly not without our problems. Some of our county bridges are being shut down and have weight limits placed on them. And the federal government has increased requirements on local governments to inspect bridges, which isn't a bad idea as far as I'm concerned, but it does put more pressure on already squeezed budgets to do that. It appears that Obama's administration is going to put more money behind electrical transmission lines, roads, bridges, internet. What all did he say in his speech yesterday? So again, I think we're going to be confronted with some opportunities. And one of the areas we really want to look at is the new highway bill, because it expires in September of this year. And so that's going to be a major set of expenditures that can mean a lot to Nebraska. In 2005, the last time that bill was passed, it was $21.6 billion for highways, bridges, rail and bus facilities, bike paths, and recreational trails. And so I think people that live in rural states like Nebraska really ought to pay as much attention to that bill, if not more, as we do to things like the Farm Bill, because it's going to make a huge amount of difference. And if you look at the legislation that emanated out of the last administration, which I assume is dead on arrival now, the definitions really favored places with 500,000 people or more. There really wasn't much in there for rural at all. And so it'll be important to see if something changes there that's more appealing and helpful to a state like Nebraska. There's a lot of emphasis on mass transit funding. Urban areas, I think, can be expected to come in and really lobby for mass transit funding. I'm wondering if it's time for rural states to talk a little bit about public transit for ourselves. Is that justifiable? If you look at the aging population and the price of gas, which is expected, I think, probably to go up again pretty soon, a lot of people have to travel for medical care, just the basics, even groceries now. We've got a lot of communities out there that don't even have a grocery store anymore. So I think as we expect to see fuel costs go up again, the number of elderly and possibly even non-elderly that might use public transit systems, if we could come up with something creative and affordable, that's the thing I think we ought to be considering. And as far as that goes, how many Gen Xers and Gen Yers want all of us baby boomers out there driving around in a few years? So maybe we we'd remove a hazard off the road at the same time. We have, in Nebraska, we have two major rail lines. They don't show up on this map, but they come out of the Powder River Basin. Union Pacific comes down to, about here, and then cuts down to the south. And the Burlington Northern also comes down and kind of comes down through the Sandhills and ends up in Lincoln. We're fortunate to have that kind of rail service, if for no other reason that it creates a lot of high-paying jobs in Nebraska. But the most of their cargo is either coal out of the Powder River Basin and some of those containers, and they carry some ethanol. But they don't really have any financial incentive to provide passenger service. And I'm not sure people would really use it, even if it were there. We tend to still, I think, really like to drive our own cars. But I guess one of the questions, coupled with should we think about public transit, is there a role in the future for more railroad use by the public? I kind of doubt it, but I'm raising that just as a speculation. The other thing I think we need to think about is our power system. As you know, we're unique in the country with our public power system, and it has been a good deal for the ratepayer because what we pay for electricity is among the lowest in the country. NPPD, for instance, has been undergoing a planning process the last few months, and just in case you're interested, our primary sources of energy in Nebraska come from coal, as you might expect, because of our proximity to the Powder River Basin and the coal-fired plant at Gerald Gentleman, and I don't remember where the others are, but we have more than one coal-fired plant. 60% coal. We have about 20% nuclear, with two nuclear plants here in the eastern end of the state, one up here, Cooper, and the other one down near Peru. That's Cooper, actually, and then Brownville, I think, is the name of the north one. We use some natural gas, and about 10% of our energy comes from wind and hydro. As you know, one of the hot topics right now is how to increase wind power in Nebraska, and I think that will continue to be a popular issue in Nebraska. A lot of bills introduced in the legislature right now. The cost of energy is projected to rise under the current mix of sources, but expansion into these new sources will also be costly. The biggest issue is probably transmission lines. We rate 6th in the nation as far as wind potential, but we're only 20th in terms of using it to generate electricity. But the main reason for that is, for one thing, the transmission lines aren't necessarily where the wind is. And there is also a concern by the power companies that what do you do on the days the wind isn't blowing? And so you've got to have a sustainable source. And I don't understand all the economics of the power business, but the way it's been explained to me is on those days when the wind isn't blowing, sometimes you have to go out and buy energy from somebody else, and that's a pretty expensive proposition sometimes. So if we're going to go more to wind, we're going to have to build more transmission lines, and that's certainly going to mean increased electricity bills. But I think we're going to see increases if we stick with what we have, too. So those are some choices we're going to have to make. And again, that transmission lines have been something that the Obama administration has mentioned that they're interested in putting more funding behind. Some of our professors have indicated that they're getting questions from people who are interested in all kinds of alternative fuels. That might be something that could really benefit Nebraska. We've got a center right now that's working on that. There may be more opportunities for us there. I can't resist putting in a plug for increased funding for research and education and outreach in the areas of things like water and climate change and options for reducing energy costs in our cities and our farms and our public buildings and our homes. While technically that isn't infrastructure, that would really reduce the amount of money that flows out of our state to Wyoming and other places. And in fact, a lot of the research that we really need to do if we're going to reduce energy consumption has been done. It's just a matter of getting people to adopt it. I remember in the 70s, and some of you may too, that was something that we put a lot of emphasis on in this country, and looks like we're kind of going back to that direction. There are a few other communities that are really emphasizing going green. One that's really interesting is Greenburg, Kansas, who got blown away by a tornado here a few years ago, maybe a couple, and they decided to completely rebuild a green community. And that's an interesting experiment to keep an eye on, I think. Let me just touch quickly on a few other big ticket items in terms of infrastructure. water and wastewater systems are huge. I'm not going to talk very much about wastewater systems, but some of the literature that I've seen is if you want to attract industry, you better have a good sewage system. They're more interested in that than they are even in water. A lot of times they can go get water, but the sewage system is a real issue. When I was in the legislature, we were mostly concerned with something called LUST, which is not probably what first comes to your mind, but it was leaking underground storage tanks. We were able to take care of that. These tanks, for the most part, had rusted and they were contaminating drinking water, and we still had major issues with nitrates in the drinking water, which are particularly harmful to babies. Compared to 25 years ago, we've done pretty well addressing those issues, and we got money from the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act and also from wastewater programs. So only 9% of the Department of Environmental Quality's budget is state-funded, with the balance coming from federal funds and fees. So the total budget of the Department of Environmental Quality is about $30 million, with 42% of that coming from federal funds. We have some new expenses coming along. Folks tell me now we have to think about how we come up with money to regulate ethanol plants, but I assume a lot of that could be done with fees. The big emerging issue in the area of water quality is emerging contaminants. In other words, pharmaceuticals. People are now starting to look, our scientists are starting to look at things that we really didn't think about that are now in our drinking water. And so that's probably going to make water quality an issue that we start paying more attention to in the near future. A couple of other areas we should pay some attention to. We don't have any contingency fund to deal with emergencies in Nebraska. So we're really dependent on federal funds to take care of contamination of water supplies. If we were to see another fire like we saw out here at the tire recycling plant, or a tornado would hit an ethanol plant, for instance, we'd have water quality issues. We'd have to evacuate people, possibly contaminate air and the land around it. And so it'd be nice to have some kind of emergency fund to address those things so we're not totally dependent on the federal government. Although, for the most part, the federal government's been pretty responsive when we have an emergency. And in the case of superfunds, which are used to clean up old contaminated areas, such as munitions depots and so forth, the federal government sets an allocation, and the state is required to provide a 20% match. So currently, we have $1.7 million for superfund expenditures. But it might be prudent to have a little money set aside for that as well. But for the most part, recently, we have been more concerned with water quantity than we have water quality. The Platte River Cooperative Agreements agreement is an example of a potentially expensive issue that has to be resolved. If we find ourselves in the position of buying out water rights along the Platte River to comply with the agreement among Nebraska, Wyoming, and Colorado, it'll be very expensive for all of us as taxpayers. Some people have said it could make the cost of the current Republican River issue look minor by comparison. And I think we've spent about $10 million on that issue to date. So that's kind of a quick overview of some of the big ticket items. Along with highway, roads, bridges, communication systems, power plants, water quality, water quantity, I haven't even mentioned healthcare facilities. We need schools and parks and libraries and the kinds of things that make a community the kind of place you want to live in. So most hospitals in the state are private nonprofits, with some being municipally or county-owned. My own hometown of Chadron is using LB 840 funds right now to build a new hospital. And those funds have to be approved by local taxpayers to increase the sales tax. I think that was a good idea. But again, all of these kinds of things, if you're going to be a viable community, you've got to start thinking about, do I have enough health care and good enough facilities first to attract doctors and to take care of my population? I'm not going to really get into state aid to schools. I think it's fairly obvious that that's a really important issue. No state or federal funds, for the most part, go to help you with buildings. That's a local expense. Again, that's been a thing that's been mentioned as a possibility, the building part, as a possibility for stimulus funds. State aid to libraries, again, is a really tiny little piece of the state's budget, but it's really important to small towns, particularly where your internet access is such that people either don't have the income it takes to connect or live in the wrong place to connect, unless they have a very large expenditure on their own. So, and again, those are the kinds of things that make a community desirable. Parks, you can't forget about parks as far as making an appealing community. And our In this state, we pay for our parks with the dreaded park sticker, which I don't know if people in Lincoln get as excited about that, but when I was in the legislature, everybody used to gripe about the park sticker. And yet, we'd have to find some other source to fund parks if we didn't do that, and I think that would be pretty tough to do. And again, it's all these things are the kinds of things that make a community the kind of place somebody wants to live. I want to put just a quick little plug into other green infrastructure and mention a project at the university that's, I think, very important. Scott Josiah's sitting back here, as is Jessica. Retree Nebraska is an initiative that four groups at the university have come together to encourage the planting of 1 million trees over the next decade. Not just any trees, but trees that are good, long-life trees that, again, enhance the beauty and the energy conservation aspects of our communities. And so I'm not going to say any more about that other than I think that's an important part of our future in Nebraska. You might want to Google Retree Nebraska, or Jessica will be glad to give you all kinds of propaganda, I'll bet, over here if you just ask her. And there's a, if you have not heard about emerald ash borer, that's a real threat to Nebraska. It's a little insect that is moving our way. I think it's in what, Scott, 5 or 6 states now? 10 or 11, worse than I thought. And if that comes here, the percentage of our trees in Nebraska, which are ash, is very high, over 50%. And so just the numbers that Scott's folks at the Nebraska Forest Service have generated about what it would mean to Lincoln alone is hugely expensive. And so I don't want to miss a chance to plug green infrastructure. Finally, I'm going to talk just quickly about community development block grants, which are federal funds from the Department of Housing and Urban Development. They are actually administered by the Department of Economic Development here in Nebraska, and they provide funds for a whole range of things, building community centers, infrastructure to accommodate new industry, and so on. Maxine Mile knows all about that, being a former DED director, so if you want real details on that, talk to Maxine, don't talk to me. But some of the large cities in the state, Lincoln, Omaha, and Grand Island, get a separate block of these funds, and they're called entitlement cities. And then the rest of the state has a separate, or the non-entitlement cities compete for a pool of about $30 million of these funds. There was a proposal about 4 years ago, I think, at the federal level that would have rolled these and other funds together, all kinds of funds across various agencies. Bottom line, it would have meant fewer funds for most of Nebraska, if not all, probably all of Nebraska. And fortunately, there was an outcry against that proposal, and it did not happen. But those are the kinds of things I think we need to pay attention to. As I said, this is not a comprehensive talk about infrastructure because I could go on and on. I haven't talked about housing, which is a huge issue across the state, and many communities simply do not have the kind of housing they need to attract new businesses or even to attract the people they want in existing organizations. I used to work at Chadron State College, and I know sometimes, and Chadron, I think, is in a lot better shape than a lot of communities, but we would have new faculty come to town to look over the college, and in the meantime, the spouse was out driving around town to see where are we going to live, and I see Francis and Max laughing because they've done this. A lot of times the spouse would come back and say, I don't see a house I want to live in, it's very expensive to build a house in rural areas. So sometimes you lose the people that you really want to come into your state because of housing issues. I haven't mentioned airports, which are very important in many cases for economic development. I have only touched on the wastewater treatment issues. Those are the kinds of things that we need to be thinking about as citizens to maintain our infrastructure, and also now that the federal government appears to be so willing to pump stimulus money out here, we should be thinking about what do we really want to go after. I spent 6 of my 7 years in the legislature on the Appropriations Committee, and over time I concluded that probably the single most important thing that the legislature could do to help communities as far as economic development was to make sure that we maintained the infrastructure. And as I've already pointed out, the cost of this is so expensive that you can't do it with just state or local funds alone. You have to have that state and federal partnership. I might just mention that when the economic future is uncertain, a lot of infrastructure expenditures are one-time expenditures, at least up front. So it's not a bad thing to invest in, as long as you're taking into account what's it going to cost to maintain it. And so I think right now is a perfect time for us to start to assess, where are we, no matter where we live, what do we need the most, how do we plan long-term to make sure that we maintain an infrastructure that we need. I was talking to a guy not very long ago that's been in economic development for years in Nebraska, and the things that he pointed out that are among the most important, he thinks, for industry in Nebraska. He mentioned airport access, for one. So even though it's not a very great experience a lot of times to fly, you got to have it. And a second thing he mentioned was access to vendors, the need to buy parts or and even I missed my beer truck. This thing is a little sensitive. I was supposed to come up with my, there's my beer truck. I don't know if that's a vendor you'd want to, but when you think about the importance of the trucking industry in Nebraska, it's one of the drivers of our economy. So obviously we have to have good roads, and that also ties right into that piece to access to vendors. Another point that he made was you need multiple redundant internet carriers if you're going to have appeal to some of the high-tech businesses. And finally, not infrastructure at all, but infrastructure isn't the whole answer. You have to have a continuing flow of educated workers. And so I want to kind of make a pitch at the end here that we have to keep our infrastructure up. We've got to make sure that we're maintaining our competitiveness along those lines, but we can't forget that other side. In fact, I want to quote Thomas Friedman, who just wrote in the New York Times something that I think is really, really relevant right now. He said, even before the current financial crisis, we were already in a deep competitive hole. Stimulus tools need to be both big and smart, both financially and educationally stimulating. We need to produce not only more shovel-ready jobs, but more Google-ready jobs, Windows-ready jobs, and knowledge-ready workers. If we spend $1 trillion on a stimulus and just get better highways and bridges, and not a new Google, Apple, or Microsoft, your kids will thank you for making it so much easier for them to commute to the unemployment office or to a mediocre job. So it isn't just infrastructure. I would characterize infrastructure as necessary but not sufficient for the future of Nebraska. So thank you very much, and I'd be glad to hear your observations about all of this, because it's a time when I think a community discussion and a statewide discussion is really important, and we need to make sure that our message gets through. Rural states have been left behind the door in the past, particularly in recent expenditures on technology. And so how all of this money is distributed is really, really critical. There could be a lot set out there, and the Nebraskas of the world could get a minuscule portion of it.